Welcome to the KP Podcast, where we talk about the business of real estate, a podcast about leveraging opportunities, growing your business, and experiencing financial freedom. Here are your hosts, Keith Anderson and Peter Kamboukos.
All right, everybody, welcome to another episode here of the KP Podcast. We're coming to you from the Forum and the KP Studios. I'm Pete with your co-host, Keith. And Keith, tell us a little bit, man. You just got back from San Diego.
Yes, I did. And I will tell you this, 75 beats 105 any day. I tell you what. No, it was awesome. It was a cool experience. We did a work conference down there, did a pretty cool little seminar down there, and it was awesome. Got to meet a lot of people, had a lot of great conversation with people in the industry, learning a little bit about the San Diego market and what that holds. And it's wild over there, man. It's crazy.
Yeah. There's a lot of stuff. It's interesting. You hear a lot of things about California too. It's going to tie into what we talk about today. You know, they've got their proposed law changes and tax changes, and it's affecting, you know, some of the real estate investors and real estate over there for sure, man. But that's awesome. Shout out to everyone out there in San Diego, that came out over this last trip, guys. And, yeah, that's good to hear. I heard it went really well.
So yeah,
that's
anybody awesome. Looking for a beach house on Mission Beach, pull out your pocketbook because a Rambler out there is going for 5.5. So if you guys are looking for anything that you want, let me know. I know a great place. It's a one bedroom, half bath. It's a great spot.
Is it on wheels? Does it roll?
If it rolled, it'd be twice as expensive because you can move it around the beach. But hey, no, it does not. No, it's crazy out there. The market is literally boomed. So it was cool to see and compare it to the Arizona market as what we're seeing. And it's kind of a little bit about what we're talking about in a way today. And what's happening in our world, our market, affecting housing prices and where we're heading. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people talk about, okay, housing prices are crazy. They're always moving. They're always changing. But we're bringing you guys some stuff today of three things that we think are going to be substantial movers for housing prices in our market that's coming, that's ahead of us, and that we're seeing in plans and processes right now. This is a big thing that we want to bring to you guys, is being prepared and moving with the market.
Yeah, that's important. So we talk about, people already think, hey, we've seen these housing prices go up, we've seen rents go up. I think rents especially, you're going to continue to see those go up at a really really high level. And and the prices here, if we get some of this stuff that's proposed coming through, we're going to continue to see those housing prices climb here for quite some time. So yeah, let's get into that first one.
Yeah, we're going to go through three things today, three major items. So Pete, tell us a little bit about the first one. So I know we have current low interest rate environment right now causing a lot of people to keep properties longer. Am I reading that right?
Yeah. So I think this first one is the most obvious to most people, right? But I don't know, you know, if everybody has fully thought through what is going to happen because of the low rates that we have right now. So first thing to point out, and I think that's kind of what you're looking at there, Keith, is, you know, we've had even before this last year and a half, when the rates dropped to this very low rate, we were seeing across the country that the home ownership, the length of home ownership, if you will, was increasing. So, you know, historically it had been over the last 20 years or so, it was 5 to 7 years, depending on what part of the country you're in. Now we're seeing that number creeping up towards 10. And so on a national level, people are staying in their homes longer than what we've seen before. Now, the other thing to think about with that is over this last year and a half, we've seen rates come to historic lows, lower than they've ever been, probably lower than people will ever see again in their lifetime. So what does that make them do? Keep that mortgage longer and stay in that house longer, because they really, unless you absolutely have to sell, one of the factors that these folks are going to consider is, hey, I'm never going to get that low interest rate again. I'm going to go ahead and stay here.
Well, the people that I'm thinking about right now are to relate to or give you an example is, if I have that homeowner, okay, and they're like, man, I really wish our house had a pool. Mm-hmm. And rates are 1% higher than they were when I bought my house.
Or 2% higher.
Or whatever they end up being, or they continue to move. Do I put in a pool and finance a pool? Or do I make a move? Now, 2 years ago, I would say, let's just make a move. Interest rates are low. It's great. Yep. You probably even get a better rate. Your mortgage might go down. Like, all these things would be a factor. But as market moves and interest rates change and potentially continue to climb or go up or move and make a difference, because there's a lot of people with sub three rates, a lot of people, especially in Phoenix, with sub three rates. That's crazy. 2.875, 2.5, ridiculously low rates. If they're seeing those rates at 4% or higher, which are very likely, like that's still significantly low. But a percent and a half difference, we're talking, if you think about percentage wise, that's almost a 25% or to a 50% increase in their rate, if you think about it in that sense. So it becomes really difficult to make a move over desire instead of need, like you were talking about. If you move because of work, you're moving.
Right.
But if you want to just get a bigger house or add a bedroom or add a pool or I want a different side of town, like those things don't happen anymore.
It starts to give you more stuff to think about. That's for sure. To take into consideration. The other thing with the low rates, what we've seen too is with investors, you know, think about the fact that not only are they getting lower rates and so their cash flow is better and their overall expense is better, but some of these investors even, you know, ponied up at the beginning and maybe bought that rate down even another 0.5% or, you know, whatever the case may be, they definitely don't want to give that out. You know what I mean? And so now you've got,
why would you 1031? Why would you do a movement? Why would you move your house?
It's got to be a good reason.
You would have to have a substantial reason. Now, the big reasons that I can think that might still affect it, let's say they have a bunch of short-term rentals and Airbnbs go away in a certain market. They'd be forced to sell it at that point, or they'd be forced to go long-term. But if you got a 2 point something, or even for an investor in the threes, if you have an investor rate in the threes, you might not see that in our lifetime again. Who knows? Right. You might not ever see it again. So to lose out on that, think about that potential growth of income over 10, 15, 20 years when you're talking about a 2% difference on an interest rate over cash flow.
And when you're talking about the fact that your rent's going to keep going up over that time, but your mortgage isn't.
Yeah.
And if your mortgage is nice and low, that's going to be really hard to give up. So that's factor number one. That's going to give people pause, or at least a lot more to consider about potentially not selling. Therefore, keeping inventory off the market and keeping inventory relatively low, even though it's going to grow in the coming years, and driving those prices up. So we've got potential for more price increases based on what we're seeing now. That's not factored in yet. We're talking about what's coming. I know everybody thinks they're high already, but they're probably going
higher. That continues to tighten our supply. It continues to make it tougher to find a house, as hard as it is. If people don't sell and there's a ton of people wanting to buy, it's only making things tougher every single day.
So then let's talk about these next two things. Okay. Now these are things that are going through our Congress, going through bills right now, but they're not mere speculation. This is what's sitting in the proposed tax bill as it's written today, as we're recording this. Okay. And the government, whoever's in power, doesn't matter. They've got this thing where they keep thinking they're going to try to help somebody.
We need to fix it. We need to always fix it. That's what they're thinking. We got to fix something, change something. They're going to fix
it. And what do they end up doing? They end up making things worse for the people they're trying to help. So here's what we're looking at now, okay? The proposed Biden tax changes, the first one. So proposal that's in the bill right now to limit 1031 exchanges to $500,000 in gains, okay? Now, a couple things with this. Let's talk about, just to make sure everyone's on the same page, 1031 exchange. If someone owns an investment property and they decide to sell that investment property, you've got to pay taxes on it. Capital gains tax or whatever ordinary income, depending on how long you've held it, you've got to pay tax. One way investors have to get around that, or one thing that's offered by the IRS, is what's called a 1031 exchange that allows you to sell that investment property, then take the proceeds and move them into like properties. So that could be anything. Could be other like residential homes. It could be multifamily. But let's say they move it into another piece of real estate. They can keep deferring the taxes. So they do not have to pay taxes. Okay, so right now there's no limit on that. Somebody could sell a $5 million apartment complex and move all the gains over tax-free. Buy something else and keep going.
So real quick, before we jump into the more of the logistics of it, What was the purpose? What was their vision? Because I think there's two things, right? They had a goal in mind putting this thing in. No one just does things just to ruin everyone. Like, that's not the focus, right?
You're talking about why does a 1031 exchange?
So, no, 1031 I think makes plenty of sense. Yeah. But why was why did President Biden and the proposed bill currently mm-hmm. going in, what is their plan? What are they hoping for by putting this thing through?
So the thought is that, well, we're going to, you know, do it on only gains over 500,000. So it's only going to affect, you know, the quote unquote rich, the larger investors, the people who can afford it, the rich are going to pay their fair share, right? That's the thought. Well, the unintended consequences are, if you are one of these larger investors, if you're a hedge fund just a large investor, you've got properties that are multifamily or run into the millions, and you are using this, and now they're telling you, no, over 500,000, you're going to have to pay taxes. Well, they're going to start to look at other ways to do that. And one of the ways that a lot of these investors are going to do is say, okay, well, then I just won't sell. And then we go back to the issue that we just talked about. You're now then going to take inventory off the market. Mm-hmm. Even if you have, and it doesn't have to be large multifamilies. We've got some of the large publicly traded companies across the country that own single family homes. But if they're doing a 1031, you know, now where they say we're going to sell these 10 homes and move that into something else, well, they're not going to be able to do that anymore. And now you're taking, again, inventory off the market, which is going to cause supply to stay short and prices to go up.
Well, hear me out on this too, because I'm thinking about it, the flip side, right? And it's, if I owned a big apartment complex, multi-unit, whatever the case was, mm-hmm. and I have this huge chunk of cash, I got 5 million and I maybe have 10 of these, who knows? Like, yep. And we talked about these huge syndicates. We'd see a lot of things out there. They own these big giant complexes and they got to move this money mm-hmm. because if they see this bill coming, they want to get ahead of it ever having to affect them. So it might not be a thought process for them to sell right now.
Well, they're already talking about trying to make it retroactive back to the beginning of the year or when he introduced it earlier this year, but go ahead.
But that being said, either way, I'm looking to get out of these and moving them into something where I don't have to have that hit as often, mm-hmm. you know? So if I'm selling that $5 million unit and I go buy 500,000 or less houses or whatever, 20,000 or $500,000 or less in houses,
yep.
then I can avoid hitting that 1031 limit in future sales if I go one by one or something along those lines moving money. Would that not reduce our supply even further by investors picking up more and more of these single family homes in our market?
Yep. It's going to be some of those details will be potentially of what they end up putting in the bill. But yes, it's going to create more competition for those single family houses. But people are going to position themselves into what they want to hold on to. It's not going to, like, they're just going to be like, okay, well, I'm getting out of real estate. No, they like real estate and all the advantages and the investing side that it provides. So what they're going to do is position themselves for the longer term to hang on to these things mm-hmm. and provide more competition for first-time home buyers, new folks that are trying to come out there and buy these houses. Well, it's hard when you're competing against people with deep pockets and millions of dollars that can just go in there and buy them cash, knowing that, hey, I'm going to hang on to this for the next 10 years
yeah.
because it's not worth it for me to sell.
I'll wait until this law changes, or I'll wait until the tax guidances change in the future, you know, and that's,
or just hang on as long as I can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that makes it really tough, because if you get into this would cost them thousands and thousands of dollars. So that would be a bad investment decision at that mm-hmm. point to just sell, just because, unless you were absolutely forced to. So the decision to move properties is going to slowly continue to go away.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the next one, right? Like, we talk about the third item, but the second, a part of, you know, some of the tax changes and things coming, mm-hmm. Pete, is taxing long-term capital gains. So tell me a little bit about this one and what we're looking at or expecting, and then also what they were trying to do here, but then what exactly it's actually going to create.
So same thought here, kind of plays off the last one and say, okay, the other one was you're using the 1031 exchange to go into a new property and avoid the taxes or defer the taxes that way. Well, say, okay, well, what if they sell the taxes and they want to have the long-term capital gains, which is, a favorable tax treatment, if you will. And so if you hold a property or any investment for longer than a year, then it gets treated as long-term capital gains, which is a lower taxes than what you're paying on your ordinary income. Well, the new change would say that any long-term capital gains, anyone with taxable income of $1 million or more will not be able to have that capital gains advantage. It's going to be taxed at ordinary income, mm-hmm. which could be double of what they were paying on the,
well,
it could literally double their tax bill.
If you think about it, if they're and again, trying to target the higher individuals of wealth, if they're already in a massive tax bracket, and then on top of it, you're going to say, you're going to take away that. It doesn't, it's not like it's going to go to a low level income tax. It's going to go to a massive percentage.
And that's the thought again, right? So what we're, what they're trying to do is go, hey, you've got these rich guys here making over $1 million a year. You know, again, as you keep hearing, they got to pay their fair share. So we're going to tax them. Okay. Well, what are the unintended consequences here? Once again, you're going to have people who go, fine, then I won't sell. We're going to hang on to these. And then what are the options? You know, sometimes, I mean, let's think through that when we're talking about not selling. It doesn't mean they won't have access to the money.
They can pull it. They can take loans out. They can pull against it.
They can still keep that first and even add a second. If you want to talk about, like we talked about at the beginning, not getting rid of that initial loan. Sure, they can refinance and get rid of that initial loan. But over time, if you've got this property for 5 or 10 years,
you can pull a bunch of different stuff.
You can add a line of credit. You can add seconds to it. Hang on to that first one. Still get some of your liquidity out of there and still hang on to the property. But what it's going to do, again, is make people have additional thoughts and additional considerations about maybe I don't want to sell right now. Maybe it makes sense for me to hang on to this thing for longer. I've got low rates going in and we've got a shortage of supply driving prices up. And this, again, is going to lead to even more lower supply because now you've got several reasons. We just laid out three for people to say, maybe I shouldn't sell, or at least it's going to give them pause and they give them reasons to hang on to these properties, to keep them off the market, to keep that inventory low, which, you know, everybody knows supply and demand. We got less supply. Demand is still there. Prices are going to keep going up. And so it's, again, it's going to end up hurting individuals because again, at the end of the day, if you're a big company, you're a big investor, you're big hedge funds, you can pay up for that. But if folks who are trying to actually just buy a home or small-time investors, it's going to make things harder for them.
I think the logic behind it all is people that are that have this type of wealth that they're trying to target to try and hit, they're smart. They're going to pivot. They're going to move in a different direction because there's a reason why they're wealthy now. There's a reason why they got to this place. It's not through rough decisions or falling into different traps or different logics. It's they've been very smart and strategic in moving their money where it needs to be the most profitable, that works the most conducive of their environment.
Yeah.
What that inadvertently does is it affects people that can't shift like that, such as a first-time home buyer. There's not more than one way to buy a house for the first time. There's just one way. It's called buy a house for the first time. So they can't move and change directions or make a shift in their income. It doesn't work that way for them. So if supply continues to get shorter and shorter, it's only going to make brand new buyers coming into this market even tough because now they're competing against cash. They're competing against everything. And some of them don't even have what it takes to really bring that full down payment down. They're competing against harder interest rates. It becomes tougher and tougher in a shorter supply.
It absolutely does. Like you said, if you're at those levels, you've got resources and you've got options.
Yeah.
Like we said, if you're making over $1 million taxable income, you know, you're not going to fall into the category of, hey, I have to sell my house because my job moved to Texas. You know, you're not making that call. You don't have to, but someone else is going to have to, and that hurts them. I think another thing to consider just kind of second level, and this goes for everyone listening out there, if we're just thinking about how real estate works and what we're seeing now, we're always seeing those rents lag. Right. So that's why we keep saying we saw the big increases that we've been talking about that are coming in the back half of this year. We're seeing them now. They're going to continue. Man, you know, in our market, in Phoenix market, we've been seeing those rents go up. But think about everything we just talked about. So if you've got people hanging on to these houses longer, if you've got prices going up, and now you've got first time buyers or people you know, near those less expensive homes that now can't get in there, some of these people were already seeing this have to rent.
And who do they rent from?
It turns them into renters, right? So they're renting from these folks. And what else does that do? It creates more demand for rentals. And just like with the house prices, what does that do? It drives rents up.
So then you're telling me that in the end, it actually helps, potentially could help these larger multifamily owners or these larger investors that owns a lot of properties because inadvertently it pushes competition out of the sell market and into the rental market. Mm-hmm. And now you have more demand for your single rental, which increases your profit. So now you're really never going to sell. Because if not only you get taxed higher, but now you're making more money if you keep it as a rental, then why would you ever move those profits? So long story short, it is going to be interesting to see. It's not the first time that we've seen proposed tax plans of, again, like Pete and I were both very unbiased when it comes to this. It's on every different type of party in office, almost the course of our history. They have an action plan. They're trying to do something positive in one form or another. Whether you agree with it or not, they're trying to do something positive, but they're not necessarily looking at all the factors that come from it. In fact, we just looked at one back when COVID hit in March. We saw changes in the lending world, and we were talking to each other about the fact that they don't know what they're doing right now. They think that this is positive, and it took someone from the housing administration to step up and say, stop what you're doing right now. You're going to like mess us all up.
Yeah, you're going to crash this thing
inadvertently. And so the problem is it usually takes things to fall in their face a little bit to realize, oh no, what did we do?
Oh no, we made it worse.
it's like when you're making soup and you keep adding things thinking it might help, but you're really just making it worse. At some point, you got to throw out the entire soup and start fresh again. And it's like, man, we got to keep this thing consistent and get back to normal.
So lessons learned in this thing, I would say is, you know, hey, be aware of what's going on out there. Keith and I are still buying at this point because you know what, guys, like I said, if you can't fight them, join them. And it's one of these, like if you see what they're doing, then get on the side of whatever's gonna help you out in your personal life. Align with those. You don't have to believe in what they're doing, but do the right thing for you and your family. I mean, if you see what's going on, make sure you're getting on the right side of that play.
So appreciate everybody tuning in and listening to us this week. We got a lot of cool stuff still planned ahead. So follow us on Instagram, social media, Facebook, YouTube, at The KP Elite on all our channels. And leave us a review. We'd like to continue to have your input. Send us ideas for future podcasts, future shows, things you want to see based on the economy, the market, real estate, everything. We're an open book here to help hear everybody just gain knowledge and grow in the marketplace. Send us your questions to questions@kpeliteaz.com. And we will see everybody here in a couple weeks.
See you guys.